You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. In the dynamic world of enterprise security, identity architects and IT leaders face a major challenge. Growth by repeated acquisitions multiplies the complexity of everything. Multiple IDPs, MFA providers, policy engines that all need to coexist. This can lead to fragmented user identities and policies that create security vulnerabilities and add access friction. Strata Identity solves this. Now you can decommission unneeded IDPs and consolidate the ones you'd like to keep without rewriting apps or disrupting users, engineers, and app owners. Plus, Strata's modular architecture makes it easy to integrate with any identity provider without manual maintenance and coding. Join the ranks of cybersecurity leaders using identity orchestration. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your top identity security priorities, and receive a pair of complimentary AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Step into a new era of identity management at strata.io/cyberwire. Talos and others warn of DNS Messenger, a dangerous and evasive rat. DDoS hits Luxembourg government sites and remains a threat to businesses. The U.S. is said to be running a cyber campaign against North Korea's ballistic missile program. The U.S. Defense Science Board releases its report on cyber deterrence. Mutual recriminations over allegations of election season campaign surveillance are swirling in the U.S. I'm Dave Bittner in Baltimore with your CyberWire summary for Monday, March 6, 2017. Cisco's Talos Research Unit describes DNS Messenger, an evasive remote access trojan that avoids detection by pulling malicious PowerShell commands stored in DNS text records. As so often happens, victims were infected by enabling macros in a bad Word document. Such in-memory malware can be difficult to detect and counter once it establishes itself. Enterprises are being urged to look to their DNS defenses. The Asia-Pacific Network Information Center's chief scientist calls failure to secure DNS pathetic and savage ignorance. Government services in Luxembourg sustained a protracted distributed denial-of-service attack last week. The actors and any motives remain unknown. Before this incident, DDoS attacks against the country have largely affected financial trading platforms. Luxembourg is a more significant economic player than its 999 square miles might lead one to imagine, if one tended to overvalue physical size, an error that can be too easy to fall for in other cases as well. Consider Singapore, for example, which comes in at just shy of 278 square miles, but also disposes of considerable technical sophistication. The city-state is upgrading its already capable cyber defenses as it becomes a target in regional cyber espionage campaigns. DDoS has become effectively a commodity form of attack as resistant to suppression as any other endemic form of crime. The stressor services, for example, taken down with Hack Forum late last year, are back and being actively traded on the black market. Many businesses are convinced that their rivals are behind denial-of-service attacks on their networks, according to a survey published by Kaspersky Labs. Business rivalry, indeed, in the surprisingly cutthroat world of Minecraft services, may have been the motive behind the earlier forms of the Mirai IoT botnet.
In the U.S., an ongoing cyber offensive designed to impede North Korean missile development is revealed. Ordered by President Obama, it seems likely to continue under President Trump. The campaign aimed at what the New York Times described as cyber and electronic strikes against North Korea's missile program in hopes of sabotaging test launches in their opening seconds. There have certainly been test failures as well as successes in North Korea's recent program. How many of the failures can be attributed to American interference is unclear. The Defense Science Board's Task Force on Cyber Deterrence has publicly released its final report. The report offers a standard definition of deterrence and notes the hesitant and incremental way in which U.S. deterrence has so far evolved. Part of the difficulty in developing an effective deterrent lies in different adversaries' very different sensibilities and susceptibilities. Major powers, minor powers, and non-state actors make distinctive risk calculations, so no single form of retaliation is likely to dissuade all possible threat actors. The principles, the task force argues, should inform cyber policy are familiar from other earlier forms of deterrence. A mix of denial, that is, defenses that would reduce vulnerabilities and dissuade attacks by convincing adversaries of their futility, and cost imposition, the credible, assured prospect of retaliation that would impose unacceptable costs on an attacker. The task force discounts cyber arms control as not viable in the real world, although it does see some utility in what it characterizes as rules of the road in cyberspace. In this respect, cyber weapons are more difficult to contain than nuclear weapons. They're relatively easy to acquire, they don't take a large industrial plant to develop or produce, and they are also easy to deliver. Among the more interesting recommendations in the report are its fairly hawkish calls for more work on credible cyber offensive capabilities, with the clear understanding that such capabilities should be pushed into U.S. combatant commands and not necessarily held at a national level. The task force recommends that priority be given to hardening strategic strike capabilities. The report envisions an extensive technology scouting program to find new, more capable ways of achieving cyber resilience, and it also advocates establishing technology accelerators to prompt development among such lines. Another key recommendation is easy to state but hard to implement: develop effective, reliable means of attribution. The task force sees three areas in which work could improve attribution. First, improving identification and authentication of the users of our systems. Next, sharing situational awareness between adjacent systems. And finally, conducting behavioral analysis, tying actions to actors, rather than just depending upon transaction analysis, looking principally at tripwire events. These at least suggest the lines along which future development might proceed. A great deal of that work remains to be done. Over the weekend, U.S. President Trump said that his predecessor engaged in surveillance of the Trump presidential campaign. The former president's spokespeople retort that any surveillance would have been pursuant to FISA warrants. So there's a great deal of mutual hollering about a second Watergate, with the two sides disagreeing over who exactly was the Nixon figure this time around. The president's partisans argue that the surveillance was either entirely illegal or, at best, an illegitimate exploitation of the FISA process for a political end. The former president's partisans retort essentially that no one could actually abuse FISA, and that if there was surveillance, then there was lots of smoke that convinced the judges that there was probable cause of some espionage fire. Despite the predictable degree to which minds appear to be made up, this story is, as they say, developing.
And now, a word from our sponsor, Zscaler, the leader in cloud security. Cyber attackers are using AI in creative ways to compromise users and breach organizations. In a security landscape where you must fight AI with AI, the best AI protection comes from having the best data. Zscaler has extended its zero-trust architecture with powerful AI engines that are trained and tuned by 500 trillion daily signals. Learn more about Zscaler Zero Trust Plus AI to prevent ransomware and AI attacks. Experience your world secured. Visit zscaler.com/zerotrustAI. The IT world used to be simpler. You only had to secure and manage environments that you controlled. Then came new technologies and new ways to work. Now, employees, apps, and networks are everywhere. This means poor visibility, security gaps, and added risk. That's why Cloudflare created the first-ever connectivity cloud. Visit cloudflare.com to protect your business everywhere you do business.
And joining me once again is Rick Howard. He's the Chief Security Officer at Palo Alto Networks, where he also heads up Unit 42. That's their threat intelligence team. Rick, you and I have talked about orchestration before, security orchestration, but you wanted to take a little time today to give us a little background, a little idea of how we got to where we are today.
Sure, I'd love to do that. As you know, automatic orchestration is this idea with all the security tools that we have deployed in our environments. How can we automate the process converting newly discovered indicators of compromise into new prevention and detection controls across all the tools, especially since most of us use a different vendor for each of those tools. And you know what? Security vendors don't like to talk to each other. So in order to understand how we got to this problem, it's useful to go back in history a little bit. And when I started doing this back in the 1990s, the prevailing security philosophy was something called defense in depth. You've heard of this. Deploying multiple defensive controls in front of the adversary in an effort to stop the adversary's advance. Now, the military has been using this idea forever, and some say since the time of the Romans. The nuclear facility architects have been using that same idea to build their structures since the 1960s. I was curious about who came up with the term for using it in cybersecurity space. So I looked around, couldn't find the source. So I put the question out on social media and said, anybody know who came up with the idea of defense in depth for network defenders? All the military people came out of the woodworks and said they had captured that phrase in their doctrine in the early 2000s. But I knew that was too late. So I kept looking. I finally found a paper written in 1991 by a malware researcher named Fred Cohen. Now, in this paper, he didn't say that he invented the idea. He just said that network defenders should be using the concept. So it didn't really prove that he was the originator, but I couldn't find anything else. So I got fed up and I called him. I said, hey, Fred, are you the guy that invented, I know, network defense or defense in depth for us? And he said, no.
He said, who is this and how did you get my number?
Yeah, I have a stalker. He said, no, he wasn't the guy that invented it, but he was probably the guy that first wrote it down in a paper. So there you go. I'm giving him credit. Fred Cohen is the guy that invented defense in depth. All right. So I'm sure he'll be amazed that I've done that for him. So defense in depth worked great in the 1990s. But, you know, as the adversary matured, it started to not work so well. The bad guys regularly found ways to sneak through the seams. But it was the only philosophy we all had, so we all still used it. That changed back in 2010. You know, Lockheed Martin published their now famous kill chain paper, and that really disrupted the entire industry. Mm. And I always assumed that kill chain came from the Lockheed Martin guys, but I found out that is not true, okay? They are not the ones that originated the phrase. It comes from a guy, Air Force general by the name of John Jumper. And the reason he came up with the phrase was, do you remember back in the Gulf War, what we were all worried about? The first Gulf War now. It was the Iraqi Scud missiles.
Right.
Right? Saddam Hussein was launching these things into civilian populations, and the Air Force, the U.S. Air Force and the U.S. Navy had a really difficult time finding them and destroying them before Saddam Hussein could launch them. So after the war, General Jumper was given the task to fix this problem. So he told his staff on the Air Force that we need to be much more quicker at finding targets on the battlefield and destroying them. He told his staff that he needed to, get this, reduce the kill chain from weeks down to minutes, all right? Mm-hmm. So he's the guy, right? So when Lockheed Martin wrote their paper, they took the idea from the Air Force and tried to apply it to cyberspace. So like I said, the paper revolutionized the industry. In the old defense in depth days, people like me, network defenders, you know, we managed, you know, 3 to 4 tools. But in the post kill chain paper days, small organizations, I mean small businesses, right, typically have 10 to 15 tools deployed. Medium-sized organizations have 50 to 60 tools. And large organizations, you know, like the Goldman Sachs of the world, they have over 150. And, oh, by the way, nobody's InfoSec stabs increased. The stabs are the same size. So the result is that most organizations do not have time to correctly manage all the tools that they have, and the network defenders have started to demand from their vendors that we manage the orchestration for them. So the whole point of this is the reason we need orchestration is because we're trying to fix the problem we caused ourselves when we all said that the kill chain was the right philosophy to adopt.
All right. All that and a little history professor thrown in there, huh, Rick?
Thank you, sir.
All right. Thanks for joining us, as always.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
And that's the CyberWire. We are proudly produced in Maryland by our talented team of editors and producers. I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. And now a word from our sponsor, Netskope. Netskope is a worldwide leader in SASE and Zero Trust. Its unified platform, Netskope One, provides optimized access and zero trust security for people, devices, and data anywhere they go, helping customers reduce risk, accelerate performance, and get unrivaled visibility into any cloud, web, and private application activity. To learn more about how Netskope helps customers be ready for anything on their SASE journey, visit netskope.com.